Call the meeting to order. First up is the approval of minutes. Representative Davids will move the minutes of...
So move, Mr. Chair.
Whatever the last meeting was, March 11th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. First up is Representative Murdoch, House File 3024. This came out of the division. Chair Davney would normally move that. He's not here quite yet.
He is in the room.
He is in the room. So Chairman Davney will move the division report from House File 3024. Be recommended pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Murdoch then will move House File 3024, be recommended pass to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Committee on Higher Ed and Workforce Development. Representative Murdoch, it's my understanding you do have an amendment. Is that right? The A2?
Yes, we do, Mr. Chair.
And that is an author's amendment?
Yes, it is.
All right, we've got an author's amendment. Representative Murdoch will move the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Murdoch, your bill then is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, pretty straightforward bill. It's dealing with housing, affordable housing, single-wide manufactured homes. It's also jobs can affect this thing. It has the support of the Commerce Department. They're here. Mark Bruner's here from Minnesota Manufactured Home Association, have their support. Went through division unanimously. So I guess with that, I don't think we have any opposition here right now. So I would say all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Sorry, that's your job.
Representative Murdoch.
I thought you were going to
Thursday, that'll be your turn. How's
okay,
that
I
sound?
I thought you were going to throw it at me.
All right. Is there anyone here that desires to testify with respect to House File 3024? Seeing none, Representative Murdoch will renew his motion that House File 3024 is meant to be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance with a recommended referral to the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. You guys. He's one of your own. I see, by the way, we've got Mr. Marsh back. So what do we owe the... we've got an alumni in the room. It's kind of like on the House floor when you get a former member back. Welcome back, Mr. Marsh. I understand you were, the rousing applause. By the way, I think there's some sort of investigation going on for things that you had in your office, like last week or something. Representative Zellers, I think, was going to report that. Next up, we've got Representative Nelson's bill, which Representative Davney is going to present. So, Chair Davney will move... House File 3360 be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. And Representative Davney, it is my understanding that there is a DE1 amendment. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I also have an oral amendment that I would like to incorporate into the DE1 amendment.
Let's do that then before we take up the DE1. Where is your oral amendment go, Representative
Page
Davney?
8, line 12, delete the word SOLE, S-O-L-E, just for those who are tracking.
Now, Representative Davids and I had a long discussion about that earlier. We're glad you're making that change. With that oral amendment incorporated, Representative Davney then will move the DE1 amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Davney, then to your bill or to Representative Nelson's bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Excuse me. House File 3360 deals with education requirements for residential building contractors. It hopefully makes the process for DALI more transparent, the approval and process and standards more transparent, saving time for DALI staff, course sponsors, course instructors, and increases the numbers of quality courses that are offered to contractors. Gives the commissioner the ability to require course content for up to 7 hours of the 14 hours of education credits required to cover changes in the state building code. Allows contractors to earn credit through qualifying internet education courses that I know is a particular interest of Representative Davids. Establishes a proven third-party internet course approval process to help DALI staff focus on evaluating course content. Gives the commissioner the ability to restrict a course sponsor from offering courses for up to 2 years if the education rules are not followed, and aligns the statute with recent changes to require a 2-year license cycle for contractors and remove outdated references to prior rule language and statutes. With that, Mr. Chair, there are people in the room who actually know the bill far better than I.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Before we get going, though, Representative Davney, I know that Representative Davids has a question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davney, are there any tests in here?
Fortunately, you have an expert that's joined you at the desk. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Atkins, my name is Karen Lanier. It's spelled L-I-N-N-E-R. I'm the Director of Codes and Research for the Builders Association of Minnesota. Representative Davids, there is one requirement for a test, and that is on the internet education. So there would be a test that and the participant has to pass as get a 70% or better. The other courses do not have tests now, and this doesn't change that for the in-class.
There's now a follow-up question. Representative Davids?
Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned about these high-stakes tests where you have to get 70%. On them, are there, Mr. Chairman and ma'am, are there any modules specified in the education bill here?
Modules.
Ms. Lanier?
Chair Atkins, Representative Davids, have you had personal problems with this? I just want to know where we're coming from.
Madam Chair, yes, I have many
How long
personal
do you
problems.
Representative Davids, anything further you want to get in your personal
Mr. Chair, problem? We don't have the time. I'll pass.
Mr. Chair, it occurs to me that in our line of work, we only need a 51% passing rate.
It's an excellent point.
And Mr. Chairman, I've been known to get 50% and not pass.
It occurred to me as well.
Ms. Lanier, anything else you'd like to add? I'm guessing you came to answer questions or concerns.
Absolutely.
But, and Representative Davney, is there anyone else that you know of that wants to be heard for sure?
Not that it's darkened my doorway.
Okay. And we'll just is there anybody that desires to be heard with respect to House File 3360? Are there questions or concerns other than about testing or personal issues for House File 3360? All right. Seeing none then, Representative Davney will renew his motion that House File 3360, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
The Representative Simon's bill is up next. It's House File 3065. He tried to get away, but we caught him.
Yeah.
And we've got, I believe, Representative Junkie, as soon as he gets here. We always try to take non-members' bills, but he's presenting a bill in another committee right now, I believe. So Representative Simon, then we'll move House File 3065, be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. Representative Simon, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I hope this will be quick, although there are a couple of people who want to be heard on the bill. This is a bill that already passed one committee. This is its final stop before we go to the floor. And this has to do with the safekeeping of municipal investments. Part one basically says that they can keep their investments with a financial institution that has business operations located in the state, not just its principal executive office, but any business operations. And then the second part's a little more complicated, but has to do with certain requirements of safekeeping. And for that, I think I should turn to the testifiers. First and foremost, I think we're lucky to have here our state auditor, Rebecca Otto.
And actually, Representative Simon, isn't the protocol that we, and please welcome, but don't we refer to people as their office, the highest office? So if a person is a former U.S. Senator, something we call them Senator. So Representative Otto, welcome back.
That's what I should be saying. That's
right. Not that we don't have great regard for the state auditor's office, but I think the higher office is state representative, at least in this body, isn't it?
Is, yeah.
Aren't we? All right.
Oh,
so,
okay.
That's bipartisan.
We're happy to have you back. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, Rebecca Otto, the state auditor, very nice to be here. I'll do the 30,000-foot view as the state auditor for Section 2 of the bill. By adopting this change, it will help many counties and cities avoid additional costs, which is a good thing in these tight times. It's going to reduce audit findings for them, and it will provide more security for public investments because brokers will be required to carry CIFIC coverage, which is insurance coverage for public entities' investments. Second point, current law is antiquated and was put into place for a handful of brokers in Minnesota who are no longer in existence. And finally, it's really good from an auditing standpoint. This change will comply with GASB and the issue of custodial credit risk. And so from my perspective as a state auditor with a local entity, it's a really good change.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Here we go. Representative Davids?
Well, Mr. Chair, just a comment on this. I support Representative Simon's bill here wholeheartedly, but I look at this and, you know, we're always talking about fencing bills. Whoever wrote this back in the day, this was a fencing bill, wasn't it? I mean, it only allowed certain companies to be able to operate.
That was a curveball, Representative. I was waiting for a testing question of some sort.
Are there any tests in here?
No tests that I know of.
Representative Simon? That's a good point, Representative Davids. Are there other questions for State Auditor or for Representative Simon at this time? I believe you've also got Mr. Grundhoffer.
Right. Mr. Grundhoffer is here from the League of Cities.
Afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Grundhofer with the League of Cities. I will just speak to Section 1 of the bill, which pretty much all that does is enlarge the group of banks that we can do securities lending with. The practical import of the current language is that we can only do securities lending with one bank in Minnesota. And as much as we all love U.S. Bank, and we use them for our service as well at the League, we think public policy would suggest that local governments have a little bit more than one option for purposes of their securities lending alternatives. So stand for questions if there are any.
Fair enough. Are there questions for Mr. Grundhofer? Thank you. Is there anyone else that desires to be heard with respect to House File 3065? If not, Representative Simon then will renew his motion that House File 3065 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simon. Representative Junkie has joined us. House File 3122, the Chair will move then that House File 3122 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. Representative Junkie, it is my understanding that there is a DE3 amendment and that you're then going to have an A1 amendment to that, but let's move the DE3. It is an author's amendment. Is that right, Representative Johnson?
Yes, it is.
All right. The chair then will move the DE3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. It's my understanding then, Representative Junkie, that the A1 amendment is also an author's amendment to the DE3. Is that correct?
That is correct.
The chair will move the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Junkie, then to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got someone here to briefly explain the bill with me. Let me tell you, this is for the DE1 you did is language to add regulation for appraisal management companies. That's a rather new phenomena in the appraisal field. For full disclosure, I'm a licensed real estate appraiser too. It's kind of a new phenomena. There's national language being developed, which is what you're basically seeing before you, to make sure that Commerce and others have a handle on appraisal management companies. And what I've done over the last year, frankly, there was a bill introduced last year. I had the appraisers from Minnesota, as well as the department. I've worked with the commissioner's office very closely on this. The appraisal management companies who are being regulated, I've worked with them, as well as the realtors. So, and I told them all, I'm not bringing a bill here unless everyone agrees to the language, at least, whether you agree with the premise of what's being done. But all the language should be in a form that they all accept. And again, modeled after national language. It's a lot of it's kind of boilerplate to make sure that Commerce is collecting the right data, et cetera, on there. The second amendment that you saw go on just is basically recodifying some current law on appraisal advisory boards to the commissioner. And again, I've worked with the commissioner's office. They certainly see the value of these appraisal advisory boards, and they've kind of been reconstituted in the last year or two. And so we want to make sure that we codified in law what they're doing and what they're working with the Commerce Department on. Again, I worked on them with that, and I believe everyone is fine with that language too. But with that, some information on the appraisal management companies I'm sure would be helpful, even though I know your committee's probably read everything and are fully informed. If you'd allow, she'll give you some brief explanations on why it's here and what's moving forward.
We'd appreciate that. We actually met for a couple hours ahead of the meeting.
Okay.
To go through it line by line, but
I'm sure you did.
We have some pretty good familiarity, but it'd be nice to have a walkthrough for those that weren't paying attention.
Okay, thank you. My name is Wendy Walker. I currently am the president of the local North Star chapter of the Appraisal Institute in Minnesota. I also am a member of the Real Estate Appraisal Advisory Board to the Department of Commerce. And as Representative Junkie was saying, these bills have been broached in many states. To date, I believe that 7 states have passed AMC legislation, and I think another 4 have passed it waiting signature by the governor. 15 to 20 states have it in process. So why is this all happening at once? AMCs are not new, but they are growing in number rapidly because of the Home Valuation Code of Conduct, which went into effect in May of 2009. And the HVCC was brokered between Fannie Mae and Andrew Cuomo of New York. And what it tries to do is create a separation between lenders and anybody who can earn a commission once a loan is completed and the assigning of an appraisal. One way to accomplish that is to have a third party, which would be an appraisal management company, handle the administrative function of hiring appraisals and transmitting them back to the lender. So even though they've existed previously, they're becoming a more common business format. And as a new form of business, I think it is very important that how they operate is clear to the people in Minnesota, that there's some responsibility from the AMC to the appraiser and from the appraiser to the AMC. I think this bill does address that. And some of the issues that have happened with appraisal management companies in the past that would not be allowed under this bill is that there have been some instances of appraisers who have lost their licenses for one reason or another, and then they turned around next week and started up an AMC company. This bill would not allow that to happen. And so we feel that it's a big step forward. It's just a beginning to identify AMCs and be sure that they are all playing by the same rules in Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Are there questions for Ms. Walker for Representative Junkie? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Walker, as I read through this, is this kind of like a comparison like in the insurance industry where you have agents and then you have agencies where you could have several agents working for an agency? Is that kind of what we're doing here?
I know nothing about the insurance.
Ms. Walker? I don't either. Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Walker.
Representative Davids.
With this bill, I don't see any testing in here.
No.
Okay, and are there any requirements for continuing education, or what is, I mean, this kind of the slippery slope, nose under the tent type thing, where today you get this and tomorrow you want continuing education and
there's a requirement that employees of an appraisal management company be aware of all the steps in the appraisal process, but there is not a continuing education requirement, there is not a testing requirement.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, this is a fine piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chair Junkie, I had an opportunity to visit with the Ag Committee's committee administrator earlier, and it was brought to my attention that you're being an appraiser, and I was just wondering if there's any impact on value of property with a man lift in his
Well, I was wondering how we get man lifts back. Do you have an amendment?
Every day is a man lift day here in the Commerce Committee.
And by the way, Mr. Chair, we do want to fully recognize Representative Lilly, who stopped into the Ag Committee today, and we recognized him as an audience member and observer. So thank you.
It's kind of what we did with Mr. Marsh earlier, whenever we have special guest stars. He doesn't seem to appreciate my identifying him as being. Any other questions or concerns, Representative Lilly?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure my question was answered.
I'm not sure it was
either. All right, Representative Mullery?
I just really want to know why Representative Davis is so worried about getting educated.
No, you don't.
No, you really don't.
We already know it all.
All right. Are there any other questions or concerns for the Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, in looking at both the bills introduced and the H3122DE3 amendment, it's the first time that I can recall seeing the terms noun and adjective in legislation, and I'm wondering if there are particular verbs or adverbs also used in appraisal.
Representative Junkie?
You would have to ask our crack research staff who worked on this language. Is Mr. Pender's not
who,
here.
So. Who don't see
this
to
was
be
his.
Here.
This was his language. Maybe he's gone for a reason right now. I don't know.
I've never seen that before.
He went to grab his strunk and white. Is that the?
Perhaps.
Yeah. So he'll be back. I'm sure that's a question that we can get to.
And maybe it is just his notes showing up in here. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know.
I want to find out if there's additional testimony, though. Sir, are you okay? Love to hear from you.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, my name is Timothy O'Brien. I'm representing TAVMA, TAVMA. We are the trade organization representing the largest appraisal management companies in the country. I am personally employed by RELS Valuation, an appraisal management company nationally based in Bloomington. We are here to offer our support for the bill. Representative Junkie is correct. We have been all brought together in terms of a stakeholder group, and we feel that the bill introduced today is a reasonable bill and represents the best interests of our industry. Therefore, we thank Representative Junkie for the opportunity to be in this process and support the bill as is.
Thank you very much. Representative Junkie is known for peace in the valley, right, Representative Davids?
I learned that from my friend, right. Representative Davids, yes.
And is there anyone else that desires to be heard with respect to the bill? All right, questions? We've got Representative Zellers.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I did actually have a question. Representative Davids brought up the fencing question before. I'm just a little concerned. Is this going to make it more difficult or at least a little harder for new people to get in?
To be honest, the fees are a reasonable fee in the particular industry. If I remember correctly, I think it's $2,000 every other year. So it is not a typically high level of entry, barrier to entry into the management company space. Many of us have been in this space for 25 years or longer. However, certain individuals would still be able to enter the space relatively easily, in my opinion.
Representative Zellers, anything else?
Just making sure it's fair for everybody, Mr. Chairman.
Belts and suspenders, Representative Zellers, as you're known to say. Are there other questions or concerns? Or anyone else that desires to be heard? If not, Representative Junkie, thank you. And the Chair will move then that House File 3122 be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. As amended, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair,
thank
and members.
Thank you very much. We have Representative Lane. Still looking for. All right. We'll wait.
You can wait till next week.
We went looking for her, right?
You can just table it indefinitely, Mr. Chairman.
We certainly could, but we're not going to.
Here to offer solutions, Mr. Chairman.
Well, when Representative Lane does enter, can we at least give her a nice round of applause? No. Until then, we'll just hang out. We'll be in recess until Representative Lane joins us.
Yeah, really.
That sounds like me.
See, if I could have your attention, please. This is truly important. While we're in recess, which is appropriate, we've got our NCAA pool, March Madness. It's free, so there is no, being that we're the committee that oversees gambling and all, even though there's nothing really at stake since you enter for free, but the chair's buying pizza for folks that can beat me, including Representative Knuth there, who's finished last 1 year, I think, didn't you? Second to last. Yeah, with picking all the orange teams. Syracuse. I don't think you're finishing anywhere close to last if you take Syracuse this year. But have fun and enjoy seeing how the basketball tournament goes. It's just nice to see the Gophers make it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
With that, we continue in recess while we search for the ever evasive Representative Lane.
Who's going to win it? I know you're not really focused on.
Are they even having permits?
Yes, absolutely.
He had another one. Which Melissa told me.
Thank you.
She said, what's that about? And she says, well, Ron's been working on it for 2 years.
I just guessed.
All right.
If you can do it online,
I'm a hockey guy,
because I got to put it in online.
She says Ron's been working on it for 2 years. It's in your committee. He hasn't talked to you about it? There's a big fight on it.
Yes.
She works on family stuff.
Oh, I think I...
Human integration. I don't know, but she's the one. He has to talk to you about this. He's the one lobbying. So geez, could you just let us know some of these things? Then he said he was going to do, I don't know, a fight. What we can. I said, did you really think they did last? He said, of course. And then he said, well, this is a trick. We might pull.
There you go. I like that. Hey, my dad. I put my 11-year-old daughter at Bayer Power.
I've had them check it more. She gets up and
her word
on you do that. She's the only one that we look to on that. I couldn't believe it. She just has total control. Hear everybody. I'm the same old Eric. I said to Ron, I really think you can do that. We were hoping. Yeah, oh yeah. Those tools, they just all stand there. They had so who was better than any of your companies for business.
Yeah, I'll be busy for the next 2 weeks. I never do these things, so I never want to move against these things.
They're the ones that work.
So I take different records from my back. Maybe just throw away me. Or pickers from there. Same with fantasy.
You know, the other solution is easy.
I've been in there.
Who does it cost?
Last couple of years, yeah.
You found the fantasy?
I got some. I lost my $50.
Yeah.
But in all fairness, both years I had an injury from it. I might draft there's a killer. Sidelines.
You're talking about
She hasn't called me back. I left her a nasty, nasty phone call. Because I gave it to her and said, this is under your own acceptance.
It's a long-term rule.
And she actually slices the bill over here.
She is.
Somebody will get it.
Well, Ron said I was going to do a rule thing.
I don't even know what I want to
do. So I write it scrupulously. I don't
know.
The shy doesn't really care about somebody said no. I suppose it's a good way to live.
Is there an extra copy of the bill around here?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You haven't gone all the way?
Oh, well.
You
haven't
gone all the way? Hi. Me too.
Me too. Oh, does he keep moving?
Yes, me too.
You have any?
Serious.
Ian?
John. I just need to know the tiebreaker, the final.
That's for real?
And I'm sure
is the tiebreaker the final score in the final game?
Okay. If anyone is looking for some glasses, John Reich has some glasses that he found somewhere.
He's holding them up, but I
get them cheap.
Can't see him.
Oh, hey! Representative Lane! Hey!
Woo! Ask him about the note I sent him. Did I send you a note yesterday?
Yeah.
I learned that from Cole.
I got to tell you about that. He thought it was going to be
a yeah, we were playing football.
It would be so.
Where's the goal?
We need to win the morning. There's no way to finish for so he should have done it the week before.
Then they have to play.
They want to get a pop. Yeah, have an extra one.
He's bring him down. You know what he used to say?
We couldn't figure out what was going on for Christmas today.
Looks good on you.
You look better.
They must be thick.
They were bone.
All right, we'll come back from our recess. And when we say recess, we actually kind of mean it in this committee. Representative Lane, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Let me see here. So we've got 35-34. That's the chair will move House File 35-34 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy.
Okay, and you must have an amendment.
It's my understanding that we do. Let me just get that in front of me. That is an author's amendment. Is that right, a DE1?
Right.
All right. Representative Lane has an author's amendment. The chair will move the DE1 amendment as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none?
No.
Okay. One opposed, two opposed. The motion still prevails. Then Representative Lane, it's minus. There is an A1 amendment that we have, but that is not an author's amendment?
I'm assuming not. I have the amendment that, okay, let's see. Okay, no, this one's not mine.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we were clear in case the author had accepted that amendment, but we'll take that up then after your presentation. So, Representative Lane, then to your bill as amended.
All right, House File 3534 says that when a health carrier proposes a rate increase over 8%, there needs to be a public hearing on that proposed rate increase before the Department of Commerce can approve it. The amendment, and which is the way it was modified in the Senate hearing, gives more specificity to this process. It sets the timing for setting the date of the hearing, geographical areas where that hearing would be held, what's to be included in the notice, how the notice will be posted or sent out to all enrollees, and establishes that the provision is in law for only 3 years. So see if it's actually helpful. So the comments are that there's often increases in our health plans, some quite large, and there's a feeling that we have nothing to say about them and we don't understand why they're happening. You may be aware of that plan in California that has a 39% increase coming up. Short of federal reform, this bill would give consumers an opportunity to hear from the health plan that is proposing the premium increase and to voice their concerns to that health plan. So it gives the consumers a voice in the process, and it also gives them some education back. The public would be more engaged and informed. The plan is responsible for the costs of having the hearing, so there's no cost to the state. And Connecticut has done this, and other states are talking about doing it. There's concern that there may be need to be a number of different hearings, but Minsha actually did and still does some hearings to explain whenever there's a rate increase to their policy owners, and now they're moving to a process of doing it more by mail because there's less interest in the hearings, but for many years these people have had an opportunity to hear and to give their voice to the process. And I'm saying that we need to start with that opportunity to give voice and to hear back. This has been very missing in Serena, this active participant from the consumers. This not only would we be able to find out from the health plans why they need this increase, we would then be educated. This is something that consumers don't have a great deal of information on as to what is causing the increase in health care costs. Is it technology? Is it elderly people? Is it more use of utilization? What is causing it, and what can we do to be on the part of the participants in lowering costs? Without this kind of a shared playing field, we don't really have that participation. So this gets us in the game. We get to find out, give voice to the insurers as to how we feel about it and how it impacts us, and we get to find out from them exactly what's going on, and we can become more active participants in the whole process. So more transparency, more voice, more awareness and education on something that we all bear responsibility for.
Thank you, Representative Lane. Do you have any testifiers on behalf of the bill?
I do not.
Okay. Just one quick question. Do you have a sense of how much this would cost? Not necessarily to the state, per se, but obviously there's a number of meetings and notification and so forth.
Just having come from Senator Dahl, who's carrying it over in the Senate, he says that using Minsha as the example, that some of them are $750 to pull together, some of them are more than $1,000, so he's saying roughly a figure of $1,000 per hearing. That's the number he's throwing out.
Okay. Representative Davids had a bill or a question?
Mr. Chairman, I've got a series of questions here. And I don't think it's Minsha, it's MSHA,
you're right.
I believe is what we're talking about here. And they insure not all that many people compared to the other health plans. But my questions would be, okay, how many rate filings do we get a year?
Representative Lane?
The information I have from the Department of Commerce is that there was about 260 filings a year for premium rate increases. Of that, about 87 filings were for more than 8%.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative, how many hearings would this bill require per rate filing?
It depends on if it's a very small provider, it might have might not include all the areas of the state, because it added into the bill is if you don't impact more than 100 enrollees in one area, you don't have to do a hearing in that area. But if you considered four areas of the state as written in the bill, Rochester, Duluth, St. Cloud, and metro area, then you'd be able to multiply 87 perhaps by four if all 87 of them stuck to their request.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, does this include all health plans would have to do this?
Representative Lane.
It includes non-health group plans, small employer, long-term care policies, and Medicare supplemental policies.
Representative Davis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is a nightmare. Mr. Chair and Representative, what is, okay, you said 8%. What's the medical inflation rate right now?
Representative Lane.
Don't know.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's 11%. The average rate increases are 11%, so this bill is going to require at 8%, it triggers meetings all over the state that, okay. Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, I've heard voice, you give people voice in the program, they become engaged. My question is, if they don't like the rates, can they stop them?
Representative Lane.
usually a hearing is just that, a hearing. You get both sides educated on what the other side feels about it. And I would make a comment about the medical rate. If the so-called inflationary medical rate is 11 or so percent, I think that's a red flag for all of us right there, because some of that is based on what the Office of the Legislative Auditor talked about, the using the particular actuary system we use. We built in automatic inflation just by virtue of the particular actuarial rates we use, not based on reason.
Representative Davids?
Could you repeat that? That made no sense.
I don't have my OLA report with me, but there's a paragraph in there that I highlighted because I found it very instructive, and many states have actually pulled out of that particular program for the using that particular, again, I don't have it before me, but that particular actuarial rating process, because it meant that every year it was going up on the basis of, again, I don't have it before me, but it was like a upward spiral built in just on the basis of the particular, it would be like using statistics wrong.
Representative Davids?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the testimony given was that this does not cost the state anything. Well, who's it going to cost to make all these over 400 trips a year to do nothing? I mean, where I come from, you don't blow blue smoke up people's noses, and that's exactly what this bill does. And if it doesn't cost the state, who does it cost?
The health plans are supposed to cover it now. You can always...
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Representative, the ratepayers get to pay this.
Folks, can we not talk... I know it's you feel strongly, both of you, but don't talk over one another, because somebody's going to listen to this later, I'm sure. Lots of people listen to legislative history. And
I'm sure the government will be listening to it very
clearly. Representative Davids, the 400 trips, can you give me... I was trying to get my head around... what the expense would be. Can you tell me how you calculate out
the
400?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, and I think it'll be actually a lot more than that, because if it includes all plans, like the representative just said, and I believe the representative said it'd be about 87 and four trips around the state for the same company, so that'd be four times 87. It's going to be more than that if it includes all companies, so I just figured 100 times four would be 400 trips. So that'd be over $400,000 put on the ratepayers of the state. So what we're doing here is we're raising the cost of insurance premiums, including raising rates on the poorest of the poor, is what we're doing here. So, Mr. Chairman, this bill clearly raises insurance rates so fewer people will be able to have coverage. I'd like a roll call on this vote, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids. There will be. Representative Lane?
I would just point out that of those health plans, one health plan with one increase could have a maximum of four hearings, which is $4,000 to their ratepayers. So we're not going to... do $400,000 to one plan with their ratepayers.
Well,
it's a smaller
Chairman,
amount.
Mr. Chairman, to me, I didn't say that. But if you figure that they have, the department has how many rate increases, just because you have one company doesn't mean you have one policy or one set of rate increases. If you have Blue Cross Blue Shield, one of the finest companies in the state, you're going to have options blue, personal blue, this blue and that blue and the other blue. And they're all going to have rate increases. We know that. Medical inflation is averaging 11%. And so this bill would require that on every policy they have, that you'd have to go around the state, because there are separate rate filings. There are separate rate filings. So they would have to, and they do. And folks, members, this bill doesn't do anything. You go to some meeting so people can yell and scream. We already have an agency force in place. It's called Blue Cross agents or Medicaid agents or health partner agents. They scream at us when the rates go up. But this, I don't see where this bill, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't see where this bill has any mechanism to do anything. It doesn't do anything, because they can go and yell at the meetings, and if the Department of Commerce, through their actuarial study, says this rate increase is justified, guess what? The rates are going to go up. And the people, you can't do anything for the people. The rates are going to go up. Does this bill stop? Can this bill, through these hearings all around, and then, you know, geographically, I mean, you put in the statute, it has to be what? Somebody in my district would drive all the way to Rochester or St. Cloud or someplace like that at great expense to them. But I guess my question, Mr. Chairman and Representative Lane, is, so you have these touchy-feely good meetings about you're raising my rates too much. Does the bill allow anything, and I don't see it, to have the commission not approve the actuarially sound rate increases?
Representative Lane?
No, the purpose is mutual education. And I would also go back to your comment about if the inflationary, medical inflationary rate is over 11%, 80 of these 260 filings for premium rate increases, only 87% of them were for more than 8%. I don't see how that figures in, if every single one of them is having an 11% increase.
Mr. Chair, and representing that's not what he said. The average is 11%. That doesn't mean they're all 11%. An average would be some are higher and some are lower, and you meet in the middle, and that's the average, and that's 11%. So just because 87 of the rate filings were over 8% doesn't, I mean, that the average is 11% from my the statistics I've looked at. So basically you're saying, okay, you wouldn't be saying that everybody has to have a rate in, or a hearing because they're not all over 8%. But the average is 11%, but there's a very high probability that the rates are going to be over 8%. There's a very good chance. And again, this is a bill, you know, kind of reminds me of when somebody wets a dark pair of pants, gives you a nice warm feeling, but nobody really notices. And that's what this bill does. If you look at this bill, that's exactly what it does. It gives you a nice warm feeling, but it can't do anything.
Representative Murdoch, you had a question? Okay. Well, if you come up with one, you're on the list. Representative Zellers.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Lane. I'm curious as to what the Commerce Department has come back with, and maybe they're going to come up and testify about this as well in implementing this program. As if even if Representative David's math is off by say half or a fourth. That's still a whole heck of a lot of meetings around the state, and on top of the other duties we're asking them to do on behalf of consumers, I'm just curious as to what they've said is going to cost them, and what, how many FTEs, and how many hours, and the travel budget, and whatnot.
Well, we can have the argument, Mr. Chair. We can have the argument as to who is ultimately paying, but the Commerce Department has no cost from this because they bill the health plans.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So again, the ratepayers are going to pay for something that isn't going to do it. I guess we'll just let that one go, and we can revisit it. My other question, Mr. Chairman, for Representative, the author of the bill, is how many other states have tried this? Because actually, there is a fine piece of legislation moving through on another healthcare thing, healthcare program that says, you know, we've been trying these, and nobody comes. And I'm just curious as to other states that are doing this or have done this and what the costs have been. Because if we're going to create something that's already been done and we already see the costs or the lack of benefit, I'm just wondering if we were able to go to school or if we're leading the way again.
Representative Lane.
My understanding, Mr. Chair, is that Connecticut has done it just recently and more states are looking at it as another way to educate the populace about health care costs.
Representative Zeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Connecticut has passed and has put into law some of the ideas you have here with the costs, or they're thinking about it. I just want to be clear, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lane.
And, Mr. Chair, all I can say is that from Senator Dahl, he tells me that Connecticut has done this just recently.
Representative Zellers, anything? We do have somebody that wants to testify, at least one person, so I want to make sure that we give some time for testimony, but sure. I don't want to cut you off either.
No, sure, Mr. Chair. That's the point, Mr. Chairman, is that we don't know what this is going to do, and to say that just the Commerce Department is going to, they're not going to charge anybody, it's just free money, and we're going to lead the way here on how to raise people's rate. The actual idea that you have here, which is trying to lower health insurance costs, you're actually going to add to them. The ratepayers are going to pay more because the Commerce Department is going to bill them for these trips all around the state. It seems a little backward in the process to me, Mr. Chairman, but I think we'll have plenty of opportunity to give this bill another full vetting as it moves through the process.
Representative Hoppe, I know I had a brief question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got what I think will be a friendly, small, short oral amendment. And what I would propose, Representative Lane, is on line 10, after Rochester, or after the comma after Rochester, add in Marshall, comma, and Thief River Falls. And I'm just looking at the bill and thinking, if you want to do this, everything is more or less on the eastern part of the state, Duluth, St. Cloud, Rochester, and the Twin Cities. So if you're somebody that lives in somewhere on the western half of Minnesota, you've got to go either to the cities or St. Cloud probably to or Rochester, depending on how far south you are. But that way it would cover more people and allow more people to get, you know, to one of the hearings more conveniently.
And
Mr. Chair,
he wants to add more hearings.
Yeah, I know.
I was thinking Sioux Falls, but I think Marshall's probably better, being that that's in Minnesota. Well, Representative Davids,
Mr. Chair, I understand where Representative Hoppe's going. If you live in War Road, or where'd former Representative Tennis live?
Thief River Falls.
No, she lived further up than that. Or you? Let's say you live in Kennedy.
Winnipeg.
Pretty close. Closer than St. Cloud. So, Mr. Chairman, I mean, the way this is written, you'd have to go from Kennedy, Minnesota, I think that was former Representative Tunheim lived there, down to St. Cloud. But if we put Thief River Falls and Marshall in, we just went from 400 meetings to 600 meetings, potentially.
Well, why don't we have a proposed amendment, or we have a motion to amend it. Representative Lane, to that proposal?
Six of this, half dozen of the other. increases the number of meetings, makes it more accessible to people. I guess at this point I would prefer to leave it off, but I don't care. You can vote.
Well, with that guidance.
Well, cleared that up with me, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody have a strong feeling? All right, we've got a proposed amendment that, let me make sure that I got it, Representative Hoppe. On line 1.10 after Rochester, insert the words Marshall and Thief River Falls. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Resoundingly, Representative Lane. Representative Hoppe, any other comments or questions?
I think my work here is done.
Nice work. There is, as I understand, Representative Simon, and then we've got, why don't you come on down, and I do want to, as she's coming down, I do want to, it's sort of, what would you call this, a reunion day? We've got Mr. Marsh, who's been kind enough to join us. We also have Representative Lilly's family in the audience this afternoon, and they'll know not to come back here again after we, can you give a nice wave? We've got, welcome to the Commerce and Labor Committee.
Mr. Chair,
it's about time somebody showed up to keep an eye on Representative Lilly.
They're both daughters, Mr. Chairman?
Both daughters.
We only had two daughters.
Mr. Chair, would they stand for some questions?
We're going to invite them down to testify next. Welcome to the committee. I'm sorry, are we having. We do tend to have a little bit of fun in here. Yes, ma'am. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Julie Bruner. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. And I want to start out by assuring Representative Davids that there is no test either in the bill or in my testimony. So get that on the record here. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill today. Minnesota's rate-setting process for health carriers is highly regulated and overseen by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Currently, insurers are mandated under Chapter 62A to file rates with the Department of Commerce before rates can be modified. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the aspects of the bill that I think need drafting clarification, so if you'll bear with me on some technical comments. The proposed use of a Chapter 14 contested proceeding in a rate setting for health carriers is not only unusual, given the nature of Chapter 14 contested case proceedings, but will add to the health care administrative costs. The bill as drafted would require literally thousands of notices to be sent to individuals affected by the rate increase. Minnesota's nonprofit insurers have some of the lowest administrative rates in the country. We want to keep them low. And we can't support proposals that will push administrative costs higher without adding clear benefit to the system. Those administrative costs are merely passed on to ratepayers. Chapter 14, the Administrative Procedures Act, sets forth two sets of processes, one for rulemaking and one for contested cases. Contested cases are trial-like proceedings. Both of these proceedings have a public hearing. However, only the rulemaking track sets forth an express process for a public hearing in Chapter 14, Section 14.14. One question the bill does not make clear is whether the public hearing referenced in the bill requirement for a public hearing is the rulemaking public hearing or a public utility-like rate hearing. The public utility-like rate hearing making process uses a contested process subject to Chapter 14 but largely prescribed in Chapter 216B governing public utilities and the Minnesota Public Utility Commission rules. Chapter 14 imposes extensive process for notice of rulemaking hearings since the rules, when promulgated, have the force and effect of law. So if you go that way, you'll be requiring all of the notices for Chapter 14, and the bill also requires individual notices to be sent to enrollees. So we've got two sets of potential notices going out, and the cash register is just starting to ring up. Within the last several weeks, I believe this committee reduced the public hearing requirements for MCHA. This bill goes in the opposite direction for rates that traditionally do not increase as fast as MCHA rates. Imposing this type of process on health insurance companies in a competitive health insurance market is a significant mismatch, in my opinion. Currently, rate filings are not public until approved by the Commerce Department. It is unclear how a public hearing would or could inform the public during the process of review and negotiation with insurers. Notices of rate increases are now sent to employers and individuals, and when they don't like the rates, they shop around for lower rates, and they do shop around. I can assure you that competitors or other insurance companies would love to have advance notice of what their industry competitors will be proposing. I doubt that is the goal of this bill. The standards and duties imposed on the Commerce Department by 62A.02 subdivision 2, 3, and 3A before the commissioner may approve a rate increase are highly technical. It is unclear how a public hearing will help the commissioner meet the technical requirements of 62A. Currently, insurers file an index rate or a pool rate with the Commerce Department. This is sort of a core rate off of which group rates are then built, and it's generally based on medical trend in a geographic area. There are 8 geographic regions in Minnesota designated for this purpose. So the group's actual increase will be determined at the time of renewal. The rate for the group is calculated using the pool or that core rate that's been filed and the group's own experience. If the intent is to make these rate filings public upon filing with the Commerce Department, there are likely other technical amendments that need to be included in the bill to clarify this new process. But attending a hearing will not provide consumers with their specific rate increase. The process is somewhat different for individual rates, and I'm sure that the Commerce Department would be happy to explain that to you, because I can't. The added cost of these hearings, and I'm not clear how many dozen or how many hundred hearings may be needed or conducted annually, will be paid by the insurers according to the provisions of this bill. It's going to be more than $1,000. You'll probably have $1,000 in travel alone. Those expenses will increase administrative costs to the insurance companies. I know that this committee understands that those costs will be passed along to businesses and consumers in the form of higher premiums. Again, I'm not sure what the goal of the legislation is, but I don't think it's higher premiums. We all want health care costs to stop rising so quickly. The only way to do that is to deal with the underlying reasons that premiums are going up. We are all using more health care, and the cost of that health care is more expensive every year. We use high-end drugs, lots of high-tech procedures, and seem to think that more care is better care, and the more it costs, the better the care is. This is the reason premiums are going up. I'm not sure what the bill is going to achieve. If the goal is helping competitors get a preview of what other companies are doing, that might happen, since filings are not public at the current time, and they would be now. The ongoing efforts of the plans to minimize costs could be impeded. If the goal is helping consumers know what will happen to their insurance rate, it's not likely. And the way this bill is drafted under the current regulatory scheme in Minnesota, I don't think it's going to work. If the goal is giving commerce more oversight authority, this bill doesn't include additional oversight authority. and the Department of Commerce already has authority to hold hearings. If the goal, as the author stated, is mutual education, I think there are ways to do that, and that might be a good public policy objective, and maybe that's the kind of bill that should be before the committee. But this bill is not going to educate anyone. It's not going to bring health care costs down, and I would urge the committee to reject the proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Broner. Mr. Gross, are you here to provide some testimony for us as well? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, my name is John Gross. I'm the Director of Healthcare Policy. Just briefly, we're trying to put together a fiscal note for this bill, but if we're looking at, I'll give you some exact numbers here. If we're looking at in 2009, how many rate filings we had for these four categories of policies, small employer, individual, long-term nursing care, and Medicare subs, we had 87 rate filings. And of those, so you figure four, now we got six, but I'm just going to use four. That's 80, that's 341 hearings we'd have to have around the state. And we're trying to figure out, for example, MCHA used to have hearings, and then if you had them in the afternoon, some people were happy that they, you know, they could go to that because they didn't want to go out in the evening. But if you had them in the evening, then some people couldn't go. So we don't know, are we going to have them in the morning, are we going to have them in the afternoon, or are we going to have them in the evening? If they're in, obviously in the evening, we're up in Deep River Falls, there's some overtime there, stuff like that. So we're just trying to try to grasp what this is going to cost the department to do this. Obviously, the health plans pay for this, but we're still going to have to add some staff to actually accommodate all this. Because if you're thinking about 350, 400 hearings a year, we're going to be out printing every day.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
To Mr. Gross, I believe, I wish Mr. Gross would kind of keep up with the bill here, because it's not four hearings times 87, it's six times 87 with my math. That's 522 hearings that you're going to have Department of Commerce, or is it Department of Commerce has to go out on these, or the health plans?
Both.
Both?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, both the Commerce Department and the health plan have to be at each hearing.
And Representative Anderson? Okay.
Thanks, Mr.
Gross,
Chairman.
You want to finish up your testimony?
Pardon me?
It's back to you. Thank you for letting us interrupt. Is there any, did that finish your testimony?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Is there anyone else who desires to be heard with respect to House File 3534? Mr. Johnson, welcome back.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. I will be very brief. I don't want to repeat what the previous testimony was from Ms. Bruner, but from our perspective, Mr. Chairman, I think there's three things, briefly, is that we have insurance rating laws. This bill bears no relationship or tie or correlation to the laws that you all have passed to govern the process that individual insurers in all of these areas have to follow to change their rates. And so from our perspective, if we believe that that function, which you have created and funded and it's staffed, the financial regulation unit, we have one of the finer ones in the country by reputation, and I think rightfully so, within the industry and within the regulatory community, and you staff it with the qualified people that can look at rate filings, and I wish we had a rate filing here, Mr. Chairman, that we could hand out so people could see what is comprised of the information that you have to submit to change your rates, because it is a foreign language, and that's just what it is. And so the notion that is this amendment incorporates that carriers have to post the supplemental information that's part of a filing, you know, I really don't think that's helpful to anybody to look at that, because it isn't. If the notion is that the rate filing is 14%, it would be easier to get the 14% number to people instead of setting up a process, that I really don't think, if the MCHA experience, as I understand it, is indicative, people don't come to that. So it's fine that it's been there. but it's just not the forum. I think if the notion is to communicate it, and I think for the other reasons articulated, so we have a process. This bill bears no relationship, no tie to it, just sits on top of it. And, Mr. Chairman, it really doesn't serve any function in that regard. Secondly, as the chairman passed the bill and has moved it to the floor called the Interstate Health Insurance Competition Act, and the companion bill, I believe, will be moving to the floor of the Senate with the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, this is not a good message to give to companies who are coming into the state. If you'd like them to come into the state, to tell them that they have to send an executive of the company to now six locations around the state of Minnesota to go to a forum that really doesn't serve any regulatory purpose. It's to try to get some information out. So I really think it's inconsistent from our perspective. We support the chairman's bill and the efforts, and as we do on the Senate side, to move forward with some sort of legislation to encourage the growth of the competitive marketplace. And so, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I really don't see this this bill to delete everything as even advancing the purpose of trying to educate consumers about what's going on. But it will be disruptive to the current laws, disruptive to the process. It's going to add costs. It's going to move a lot of information that is not going to serve any function for anybody other than a stack of information and numbers that's not going to be decipherable by anybody. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I appreciate the time and would urge a rejection of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen. Stay there for a minute. Representative Sanders, is your question for Representative Sanders? Okay. Let's, because we do have one more testifier, and I believe one more. There might be an additional one. Representative Lilly, is that your phone again? Didn't we have that issue the other day? You were chairing, and the buzzer was going off. And he kept telling people to turn their cell phones off, and it was his. So, Ms. Rowan, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council. And I'm here with the same concerns as you heard Mr. Johnson and Ms. Bruner discuss, but more specifically, we have concerns about the inclusion of long-term care insurance in Representative Lane's bill, and we've talked about this, so she's aware of our concerns. But long-term care, unlike health insurance, is an optional financial product that's for asset protection. It's guaranteed renewable. It's not subject to annual rate increases based on health or medical trend. Since 2002, long-term care has been subject. Since 2002, long-term care policies issued after that date have been subject to something called the rate stabilization law, which was put in place because regulators and legislators were concerned about significant rate increases. And what that law is designed to do and has done very effectively since that time is that when actuaries file a long-term care rate filing, they have to certify that there will not be any increases, even if there is a significant change in circumstances. And only when there is something very, very significant in terms of a company's ability to pay claims are they able to go and ask the department for a rate increase. And even when they do that, if the department feels that it's justified, which doesn't happen very often, 85% of that increase has to go to pay claims. You can't get the increase for profit. You can't get the increase for administrative expenses. It's purely to pay claims if there is a very significant solvency issue. So we have concerns about our product being in the bill. Long-term care insurance is a very difficult product to write. Very few companies write it. In fact, we don't have any domestic companies here anymore that do write it. It's something that everyone encourages people to take personal responsibility for their long-term care needs because the state can't finance long-term care. It's exceedingly expensive. So we're concerned for the reasons that Ms. Bruner and Mr. Johnson mentioned, the impact this would have on long-term care, especially when there are already additional protections in place. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rowe. Are there any questions for the testifier at this time? All right, thank you very much. Then Representative Sanders, thank you for your patience. I know you had a question, then Representative Hoppe's next.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that perhaps troubles me or I have a question on is lines 1.23 and 0.24. We talk about the filer must notify by mail all of the enrollees affected by a possible rate change. If you take a filer that may potentially have 500,000 or 600,000 enrollees, and perhaps even just 10% of them are affected by a rate change, is this saying that the filer must mail out 50,000 to 60,000 letters just to notify them of the hearing?
Representative Lane?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Representative Sanders?
Mr. Chair, I just...
More money.
That seems to me, I mean, we talked about meetings and the cost of meetings. I mean, having to send out these notices through the mail is exponentially more expensive, and I think it's just going to be passed on to the ratepayers and not a good way to go. Thank you.
Representative Lane, anything more on that point? We're getting close to the end, but I know Representative Hoppe, Representative...
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me again, where is this going to next?
It was recommended to refer to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lane, I think before you go any further, too, I think that you need to request a fiscal note on this issue. I'm a little concerned on the whole reimbursement side of things. Can you explain to me a little bit how this would work? Is the Department of Commerce expected to carry those costs until they get reimbursement from the health plans? What does it mean for retirement benefits? I'm assuming the Department of Commerce will need to hire additional help in order to perform these functions, and I'm just curious as to, you know, what are all those costs entailed, and if you've talked to them and gotten some estimates of what their costs would be and what kind of impact that would have on the state to carry that money until they receive reimbursement.
Representative Lane.
Mr. Chair, and the end of the bill, around 2.11 thereabouts, there is a need for the health plans to pay rather quickly into the Commerce Department for the costs of doing this. And I think that we may be blowing it a little out of proportion as to what the costs actually are, but they will come quickly into the Commerce Department.
Madam, or Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Lane, I guess I would have more comfort the level, though, if we actually knew what those costs were. And right now, what I'm seeing from this bill is we really don't know. And you've said as much during your testimony of what those costs would be. So I think that that would be time well spent in just kind of figuring out what that's going to be and what that means for the state overall. But just having heard just this last week, we had a bill in committee talking about MSHA and the fact that they have these hearings and then they're not being attended, and we're in the process of reducing the hearings that they have throughout the state. I think we're kind of going in the opposite direction, and I'm also concerned that by having these hearings, again, you're just not accomplishing anything, and I'd rather see our efforts focused on actually trying to help in reducing the cost of health care. Maybe that is allowing folks to purchase their health care across state lines. Maybe it's looking at the number of mandates that we have on health coverage in this state, looking at the true cost drivers to having health coverage in the state. I think would be time better spent than just having people talk about it. If they actually saw us making some actions to lower the cost of health care, I think that would be more helpful for citizens. I think that's what they're looking for in reality.
Representative Lane.
Mr. Chair, my comment regarding MSHA, because there's a certain, I think there's been a certain trust level developed in that area because of the hearings that have been going on, and I see some faces that disagree, and they are reducing it down because of the lack of need. However, there was attendance at those hearings at first, and my suggestion, or the suggestion of this bill, is that people need to have the opportunity to give voice to their concerns and have the education come back regarding their part in the costs. And however, I'm wondering if this bill just needs some more time, and we could just bring this back another day.
Okay. Well, I know we've got Representative Davids yet on the list. Although, was your comment the... Did that satisfy you enough? Do you still need to be heard? Or you're very emotive. I appreciate that. We all know where you're coming from. But
I'm actually going to couple quick points here. First of all, it says on line 2.7, the health care.
I can't actually hear you. Are you talking in your microphone?
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a freshman thing.
the health carrier sponsoring the health plan shall pay all expenses reasonably attributable to the public hearing pursuant to this subdivision. That's troubling as far as all expenses reasonably attributable. That you could drive a truck through that one. But I'd like to make an amendment on line 2.4. It says the commissioner or the commissioner's designee and an executive from the health carrier. We're going to have Gary Bourgeoisie of Allianz or president, whatever his name is now, of Blue Cross, or all the presidents of Medica and all those guys. An executive has to go to these meetings. I mean, that's pure insanity. So I would move on line 2.4 to delete the word executive and put employee. So it would read the commissioner of the the commissioner is going to go on to one of these meetings. The commissioner or the commissioner's designee and an employee from the health carrier. That'd be my amendment.
Okay, we appreciate the amendment that is before us. We were visiting with those at the earlier meeting. You weren't at that one. They actually said they love going to St. Cloud and Duluth. So I don't know that they'd...
But they don't like Marshall.
Well, there is. Yeah, we didn't know that was going to be added on. We should have added that.
I like
that,
Marshall myself.
And like actually, we have the amendment before us. When the bill comes back, we will take it up with the bill in front of us. It's obviously a very well-intended and intriguing bill, but we're just about out of the time for our committee this afternoon, and certainly worthy of further consideration. So with that, the House File 3534 will be laid over. Thank you, Representative Lane, and thank you to the folks that came and testified for and against the bill this afternoon. That concludes our agenda for today. Thursday right now, folks, looks fairly light to the lead and the folks on the minority. We're going to do our darndest to try to get your bills ahead of time so you know what's on the agenda for Thursday. But obviously with deadlines, it gets a little bit tighter timelines. But we'll certainly do our best to keep everybody apprised.
So that, for the record, I would really like to thank you and John, especially for getting us. We're updated all the time, and I really appreciate that.
We're glad you appreciate that. Sometimes we feel a little goofy sending out so many updates, but we certainly don't want to surprise anybody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you want to tell people when those need to be in?
Thursday morning, 11 o'clock. All right. Thank you all very much. Have a good evening. With that, we stand adjourned.